MacCast, Thursday, July 24th, 2014. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, I am excited for today's show because I have a really fun show for you. We did a really fun segment with a bunch of really smart Mac podcasters, Mac analysts, Mac watchers, Mac followers, dare I say, Mac pundits, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. I know I enjoyed recording these interviews, and I'm not going to give away too much, but let's just say we played a game with these folks. It involved a list of iPhone 6 rumors, a 20-sided die, and a whole lot of fun. So we're going to get to that later in the episode. We've got a couple little news items to catch you up on. iPhone 6 looking to be one of Apple's biggest launches coming up. We've got Apple's third quarter earnings results call and some of the items and things that came out of that. Needless to say, Apple did well. And also, the Yosemite public beta hits the street. So we're going to talk about that, and then we'll get to our little game later in the episode. But before we do all of that, I need to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is Lynda.com. I've been telling you about Lynda.com in the last couple episodes, and that's because I use Lynda.com. I think it is a great service. If you need to keep up to date with your software, you want to pick up brand new skills, or maybe you just want to look into something a little bit more, you have some hobbies that you want to brush up on, get into those sorts of things, what they do is they create these really great, easy to follow video tutorials on all kinds of topics. They have over 2,400 courses. They're taught by industry experts. They're incredibly well produced, and they're adding new ones all the time. They're constantly updating their catalog, and it covers a whole range of topics. It doesn't matter if you're beginner, intermediate, advanced, you're going to be able to find something on there that appeals to you and what you're trying to do. And Lynda.com is something that I've used for a while to just keep up to date with all of my web development skills, my programming skills. Go in there and learn new things. It's a really great way. And what I love about it is how it's all broken up and organized for you. So you can jump in, you can go through an entire course, beginning to end, the whole thing, or you could even break it up. You could go in and take it in smaller chunks and segments as you have time. So a lot of us are very busy, and fitting training and things like that into our schedule can be difficult. But with Lynda.com, it remembers where you are. You can just come back and pick right up where you left off. Plus, they have iPhone and iPad apps, so you can also go in and watch when you're on the go, when you're going mobile. It's really, really great, and they have great premium plans where you can also get all the project files, so you can follow along, practice along with the instructor. And best of all, it comes at all one low monthly price of $25 that gives you unlimited access to the entire Lynda.com library, and you don't have to take my word for it. They want you to try it out. I want you to try it out. So we worked out a deal where you can get a free trial, free access to the entire course library. All you have to do is go to Lynda.com/MacCast. That's LYNDA.com/MacCast, and you can try it out. And I know you're going to love it. I absolutely love it. Use it all the time. So check it out, and a big thank you to Lynda.com for their support of the MacCast. It might not be surprising to you or me, but the iPhone 6 is turning out or looking to be one of Apple's biggest iPhone launches ever. And just in case we needed confirmation of that, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Apple is asking its suppliers to produce between 70 million and 80 million 4.7-inch and 5.5-inch iPhone 6 models by the end of December. So by the end of the year, 70 to 80 million iPhone 6 models out and available on the market worldwide. Now, to put that into a little bit of perspective, the launch numbers for the iPhone 5S and 5C combined were between 50 million and 60 million units. So Apple is upping the game for the iPhone 6 launch. And remember, this is on a mature product. There's a lot of iPhones already out in the market. So they're expecting a lot of people to upgrade, probably a lot of new customers as well, with the new larger form factor. And as a matter of fact, they want suppliers to actually be ready to supply enough components to make 120 million iPhones by the end of 2014. The reason that's a little bit larger than the actual shipping number, according to the report, is that they want to be able to compensate for possible issues. Specifically, they cite display failures. So Apple has reportedly been having some yield issues and trouble with the displays. According to the report, because of some of the in-cell display technology, that's the stuff that lets them merge the touch layer and the display layer into a single piece so they can get those things as thin as they possibly can get them. So 4.7 and 5.5 inch displays are both kind of having some issues. So Apple knows that, you know, they're going to have some work to do to get that many phones in the market. And when I read about these numbers, I thought, you know, these could either dispute or confirm the theories about sapphire glass displays. If you've been listening to the past few episodes, there's been some debate on whether or not Apple's going to get enough sapphire glass to be able to do both a 4.7 inch and a 5.5 inch phone. Some people had been speculating that Apple might hold back the sapphire display for only certain models, maybe even just the high-end 128 gigabyte 5.5 inch model. I'm in the camp of thinking that Apple's going to have a new display technology or a new glass technology across the line. So on the one hand, if they all have sapphire glass displays, then that capacity we have been hearing about at the GT plant, Apple's sapphire glass plant, their partner, of between 60 to 70 million units, maybe upwards of 100 million unit production capacity, that would turn out to be true. That would be enough to kind of supply this 70 to 80 million units by the end of December. Now, if you want to take it the other way, it could be that not all of those models, because Apple's producing so many, not all of those models will be able to have sapphire glass built into them. So you could argue, well, then Apple's going to have two different kind of glass technologies. Only time will tell, and only the announcement, official announcement from Apple sometime in the fall will let us really know. But that's kind of what's going on there. There was one other thing related to the iPhone 6 launch. There was this cockamamie report from DigiTimes, who's always hit or miss on Apple rumors. They were saying something that we've heard before in other rumors, that Apple's going to launch a 4.7 and a 5.5 inch model of the iPhone staggered at different times. But the strange part about the DigiTimes report is they're saying the reason is not because of production issues, not because of, you know, Apple having more difficulty creating a 5.5 inch model. No, they're saying that Apple doesn't want to have 4.7 inch sales compete against 5.5 inch sales. This is the thing that we've talked about. If Apple staggers and doesn't sort of pre-announce that they have the two models, they're going to have a lot of upset and angry customers. So if the DigiTimes report is right, you would assume that Apple is going to announce a 4.7 and then not tell anybody about the 5.5 so they don't erode 4.7 sales. But that would naturally erode 5.5 inch sales in my mind, because a bunch of people are going to buy the 4.7 model. Then a few months later, the 5.5 comes out. All those people have already bought phones. So that report doesn't make any sense to me. The staggered release date, I think Apple's not going to do it. I think they're actually going to have either just one size, 4.7, and that's going to be the phone for this year, or they're going to bring both out at the same time. I think if the 5.5 inch has been delayed into next year, Apple just saved the larger size for the next release of the iPhone in the fall of 2015. But that's my opinion. I'd be curious to know what you think. If you want to shoot me an email, make a comment, maccast@gmail.com. The other big news that happened this week, Apple announced their third fiscal quarter earnings for 2014. And once again, Apple announced record revenue for the quarter. The company raked in earnings of $7.7 billion on revenues of $37.4 billion. And they saw growth in iPhones, Mac sales, and iTunes software and services. All of those things were up. iPhone sales were up 12.6% over the same quarter last year and came in at 35.2 million units sold. That's really amazing if you consider all of the rumors we've been hearing about the iPhone 6 and that, you know, many customers or consumers are supposedly waiting to upgrade. So Apple's able to pull off those numbers even with the iPhone 6 sitting there looming. Mac sales were also very surprising considering some of the things we've been hearing about PC sales in general. Mac saw year-over-year quarterly growth of 17.6%. That was on unit sales of 4.4 million. And it's also amazing considering that a lot of consumers are starting to use tablets and smartphones and actually delaying computer upgrades. So the fact that Apple was able to both up their iPhone sales and Mac sales, I think, was pretty impressive. And then sales from iTunes, software and services, those increased 12% to $4.48 billion. Another impressive year-over-year increase, though not everything was rosy. iPad sales seemed to be struggling. Those came in at 3.3 million. That was down 9.2% year over year. It was the second quarter that Apple actually saw a decline in iPad sales. Now, Tim Cook commented on the sales decline, and he cited customer anticipation for new iPads in the fall. But I'm not really sure I buy that argument. Frankly, I think the issue really is that the iPads are just too darn good. The product is too good, and I think Apple is suffering from that a little bit. I mean, an iPad 2 still performs amazingly well, and I know a lot of people that have held on to their iPad 2s and have avoided upgrading because literally they just don't need to. The device is stable, it's relatively trouble-free, and all of their software still runs reasonably well on it. So they just don't feel like they need to upgrade. So Apple's kind of having to go after new consumers who maybe don't have an iPad or maybe convert consumers that bought another kind of tablet. And as a matter of fact, during the conference call, the Q&A, Tim Cook cited or kept mentioning the 97 to 100% customer satisfaction rates for iPad. People love their iPads. And he was using that to show that the product really is a hit with consumers and that they love the iPad. But I think it also just proves my point. If you're happy with your product, you're not going to be looking to replace it or maybe even upgrade it. Now, the one thing Apple does seem to be doing, and again, this came out in the comments, is looking to that new IBM deal and the enterprise to help bring on some new iPad sales and new iPad customers, pushing further into the enterprise. Apple's already done pretty well on the Fortune 500 side, and I think I mentioned on the last MacCast, I think really with the deal with IBM, it's going to be looking into getting into some of those companies just under the Fortune 500, so maybe Fortune 1000 and on down. And then plus, I think that also just drives interest from smaller companies. Even if they're not working directly with IBM, they're going to look at these companies who are implementing iPads in the enterprise and go, well, maybe I should be using iPads if, you know, all these other companies are. So I think that will help increase sales. Apple's also been focusing hard on education and also on developing markets. So there were actually iPad sales increases in developing markets. Those were up for the quarter. So it was really just North America that was kind of bringing the numbers as a whole down for iPad. And then, not surprisingly, iPod sales were down again, 36% year over year. They came in at just 2.9 million units sold, but I think that's to be expected as more and more folks get smartphones and kind of converge their music devices with their iPhone or other smartphones, maybe even their tablets and things like that. So I think we're going to continue to see iPod sales, slowing. And as far as the future, as far as looking forward, Apple's guidance to investors was, as always, very conservative. They did project a 3% quarter-over-quarter growth for the next period, and some say that could be due to Apple feeling pretty positive about the future success of the iPhone 6 and sales on that front. Now, in my mind, you'd expect then the guidance to be even bigger, you know, based on the story we were talking about earlier in terms of the number of units Apple seems to be picking up on. But, you know, along with new product launches, expenses go up, as well as the margins tend to shrink a bit as they get all these new components. So the cost of making the devices is higher for Apple, at least in the beginning, and then later in the year as those costs come down, they make more on the margins. So Apple's just always been extremely, extremely conservative when giving investors guidance on their predictions for the upcoming quarter. So it wasn't really surprising. In the past, we've seen them actually give guidance that the quarter over quarter growth will actually go down. So it was at least positive to see them looking at a quarter over quarter increase this time. And then one other interesting note from the call, R&D expenses were up 36% or came in at about 4.2% of net sales for Apple, which is a huge R&D budget, meaning they've been working on something and spending a lot of money doing it. The last time Apple's R&D expenses actually reached levels above 4% of net sales was back in 2006. And if you know your Apple history, that was right before Apple launched the original iPhone. So, I think it's not too much of a stretch to probably predict that a lot of that expenditure, a lot of that R&D has been going into the rumored iWatch Apple wearable product. And hopefully we'll be getting an announcement on that in the fall as well, along with the announcement of the iPhone 6. I think I'm very excited to see what Apple's been up to, and hopefully they've got that project far enough along where they're actually ready to show it off and give us something. I think us as Apple fans, we would love it, but also just the industry analysts in Wall Street would also, that would give them a little boost in confidence, because still to this day, they call into question, Tim Cook and his ability to actually drive innovation at Apple. That's never been a question in my mind, but it is something that's out there and looming, and hopefully Apple can put that one to rest once and for all come this fall. And then the last big thing I want to talk to you about in the news for this week is OS X Yosemite going public beta. If you signed up for the public beta program, you don't have to be a developer this time around. You can get your copy from Apple. Well, maybe if you can get on the server. They had some server issues, and it was a little bit confusing to kind of find the beta. So if you did sign up, you probably need to log in. Some people, I think, got notification, but most people just logged into the Apple public beta site. So go back to where you signed up, and you can log in. And then once you log in, you should get your redemption code that you can use on the App Store to redeem that for the OS X Yosemite public beta. And I don't think you'd be surprised to learn when Apple announced the beta was available, they got so overloaded that the site did go down. But I think those issues have been resolved. And as a matter of fact, when the site went down, I think it might have even taken some of Apple's other iCloud services with it, including iCloud Mail, which was down for a brief period. But you should be able to get in there now, at least by the time you hear this podcast. I think they'll have that all sorted out. And another little issue a couple people had that I wanted to point out is some people, when they went to get their redemption code, after logging in, they were getting a message saying that the code that they had was already used or had already been given out. If you do see that error message, go ahead and just refresh your browser, and that should clear that up. And then another little thing to note about the public beta, especially if you use a third-party SSD and have enabled trim support, it looks like it does not support trim on third-party SSDs, at least according to a report on the Mac Observer. So if you've enabled trim on your third-party SSD and you want to install the OS X Yosemite beta, go ahead and make sure you disable that. I guess the issue is that the OS X Yosemite beta will not load on a modified kernel extension, which is something that has to happen in order to enable trim. So if your KEXT files have been messed with, those need to be stock before you can actually do the upgrade. And just a reminder, the software is beta. It's right there in the name of the product. It does have a list of known issues, so make sure you look through that and read that. That's on the site when you go to get the beta. And you don't want to be running this on your production machines. Do not put this on a machine that you rely on a day-to-day basis, especially if it's something you rely on to make money with. And the other thing is, don't whine and complain about the issues. There's going to be issues. Go in expecting that. Don't go on discussion boards or, post on your blog all these issues and things like that. Apple does the public beta because they want to know where the bugs are so they can squash them. So make sure you're filing your bug reports and doing the thing you basically agreed to do by signing up for the public beta. And then lastly, as far as when we'll see the official release, 9to5Mac claims that OS X Yosemite will launch in October and that it's actually going to launch a month, up to a month after the release of iOS 8 and the iPhone 6, which is a little bit interesting considering how much integration with things like Handoff the two operating systems have now. So Apple's had a staggered release in the past. I think we had a staggered release of iOS 7 and then OS X Mavericks, so it wouldn't be that surprising for Apple to do it. Back then, the reason that was given, though, was that Apple needed some engineers to kind of finish up iOS 7, which was a huge major overhaul of the UI. iOS 8 isn't that big of an overhaul, but maybe, again, Apple's having to shift resources around, and that will cause a little bit of delay in the launch of the two products. Or maybe that's just Apple's new sort of par for the course. Who really knows? But you might expect one about a month before the other. And with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another one of my show sponsors, and that is Smile. I want to talk to you about PDF Pen for Mac. You know, I absolutely need this program on my Mac. I love the application. I use it all the time. I think it's the easiest way to edit PDFs on your Mac. I think it's the best application for doing that. And it just allows you to do all kinds of things that you normally couldn't do with your PDFs with other applications. It allows you to do things like apply your signature to a PDF. I use it for signing PDFs all the time. I like to be paperless. It allows you to go paperless because it does OCR. So you can get your PDFs in there. You can get them OCR'd so that they're easily searchable, and you can create a whole paperless workflow. You can fill out forms, and they don't even have to be actual PDF forms, because you can take a, what I call a fake form, which is, you know, a PDF that you get, and it has the little lines like you would fill it out by hand, but you have it in PDF. How are you going to do that digitally? Well, you open up PDF Pen, and you actually add the form fields, and you create a real form out of a fake one. You can export in Microsoft Word format. So if you want to have complete comprehensive editing of your PDF, you can do that. You can remove pages, add chapters. And best of all, you don't have to just do it on your Mac. They also have PDF Pen for your iPhone and iPad, and you can transition seamlessly between one and the other. And that makes your workflows really easy. Plus, it has integration with all of your popular cloud storage services like Dropbox and all those things that we use. And for getting PDFs into PDF Pen, you can get PDF Pen Scan Plus for your iPhone or iPad, which lets you just snap a picture. It OCRs, creates the PDF, and puts it right into your workflow. You can take it from PDF Pen Scan Plus right into PDF Pen for iPhone or iPad, and then get that over to your Mac and do everything with your PDFs. It's a comprehensive, great workflow. And again, I use it every day, and you really should check it out. So smilesoftware.com is the place to go. And while you're there, check out all of their other great applications, Text Expander Touch for your iPhones and iPads, as well as Disk Label. Really great stuff, and a big thank you to Smile for their support of the MacCast. So let's get into our little game. It's something I'm calling iPhone 6 Roulette. And the way it works is I've been basically looking at all of these iPhone 6 rumors, and believe it or not, I've come up with a list of 20 iPhone 6 rumors. And I put those into a list, and then I grabbed my, from my old Dungeons & Dragons days, my D20, my 20-sided die. And we got a bunch of really great Mac podcasters, industry watchers, pundits, got them on the line on Skype, and basically rolled the dice, came up with one of these 20 items to ask them about and get their opinion on. So, a lot of fun. I really hope you enjoy listening to this. I guess the first thing I should do is give you the full list. So, here are the 20 things, numbered 1 through 20, that they potentially could have talked about. Number 1, the glowing Apple logo. Some people think the logo on the back of the iPhone will actually be light up just like it is on the notebooks. The ultra-thin iPod touch-style design is number two. Number three, better battery life. Number four, wireless induction charging. Number five, the 128 gigabyte storage capacity, so increasing the storage capacity. Number six, NFC capabilities. Number seven, more than 1 gigabyte of RAM. Number eight is the A8 processor running at 2 gigahertz, probably still dual core. Number nine, optical image stabilization and optical zoom in the camera. Number 10, more than an 8-megapixel camera. Number 11, improved Touch ID sensor. Number 12, the improved FaceTime camera. Number 13, 1704 by 960 screen resolution. That's a 3x increase from the 568 by 320 original resolution. Number 14, sapphire glass display. Number 15, 4.7-inch and 5.5-inch sizes. Number 16, dynamic haptic feedback technology in the display. Number 17, replacing the 8-inch headphone jack with just the lightning connector. Number 18, power button on the right-hand side of the device. Number 19, will it have those metal end caps surrounding the antenna brakes, with the surrounding antenna brakes, or will it be glass? And number 20, will we see Steve Jobs as a hologram doing the keynote announcement for the iPhone 6? So that was my list of 20. Here is our series of interviews playing iPhone 6 roulette with some really great folks. Ken Ray, macOS Ken. Hey, Ken, how you doing?
You know, in honor of the D20, I think we should go with my role-playing name.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was Al Jolson. I played Al Jolson. I had a character named Al Jolson.
Really?
When I played Rifts. Yeah. Well, it was Al Jolson was one, and then Eggs Benedict was the other. I had his first name was Eggs. It was a post-apocalyptic time, and people didn't know anything about the names that they, you know, wow, that were chosen for them. Yeah.
I still use my D&D character name to this day as one of my online, like, avatar names.
Ooh, what is it?
Flaxis.
Yeah, I understand. Oh, really? I was kidding. Okay, so it's not a secret one. It's just a... Okay.
No, it's been out there for years, and I've used it for, like, for forever.
All right,
but
cool.
We're playing iPhone 6 Roulette. I've got 20 questions here. I've got a D20.
Yes.
We're going to roll this thing, and we're going to get a rumor, and we're going to talk about it.
All right.
That's all it is. You ready to play?
Do I have a saving throw?
No saving throw.
Okay, well then go ahead.
All right. So we've got 12, and 12 on the list is improved FaceTime camera. So this would be the front-facing camera.
Mm-hmm.
Getting
the one that's like on my head.
Update.
Like when I'm talking on the phone, it's the one that's pressed against my skin. Is that correct?
Exactly. Do you ever use that feature?
Occasionally. Not
selfies.
So.
Selfies are important, right? This is the selfie upgrade.
I don't. You know, I took my first selfie before they called them selfies. And then I honestly don't remember taking another one since then, except occasionally I will take one of me and my dog, but even that was like 2 years ago. I mean, it's, you know, have there been improvements in the front-facing cameras on other phones? Because if there have been, then sure, this one seems like a notch.
Yeah, I'm trying to, and I should have wrote in here on my notes, I can't even remember where we're at right now. I think it's only, I want to say it's a 1.2 megapixel where you've got like 8 megapixels on the back, and I'm sure someone's going to correct me when I'm wrong.
Yeah.
It's either 1.2 or 1.5, something like that. I should just pull up Mac Tracker, and then it would tell me.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Apple's weird, right? I would think that if there is a better front-facing camera that could go in there relatively inexpensively, in other words, if everybody's got a better front-facing camera, then I would think Apple would do it. But they do, of course, try to guard margins. And this actually ties into, are they going to do a $300 iPhone, or are they going to stick with all $200 iPhones, $100 and $200 iPhones?
Right.
Because if they're going to try to make a bigger phone, make a more whiz-bang phone, but keep the $200 price point, then you might be looking at the same FaceTime camera. But yeah, I mean, it seems like it would be an easy thing. It's not one that I'm that just sort of goes in the general improvements category, I would think.
Right. Yeah. This isn't one of those exciting ones. Something somewhat related to this that I think is interesting is the positioning of that front camera.
Okay.
So there's some designs and indication that it might move. So if you look at the phone now, it's right above the ear speaker. So when you have that thing to your ear, you know, it's above that. But we've been seeing some leaks that seem to indicate that Apple is moving it off to the side. So it won't be directly centered in the middle of the phone.
Why would I want that?
I think Apple's doing it because they're trying to make the phone bigger, a bigger size screen, but not take as up as much vertical height, right? So if you move that over, you can get those two in line and then you save some vertical space.
Yeah. Everybody's going to be, it's going to be like an interview on a TV show though, right? Where everybody's going to be sort of looking to the side.
Well, I don't know how much will it matter, right?
I don't know. Like we both said, it's not something that I use a whole lot. Honestly, when I do most of my FaceTime calls, they actually tend to be on my Mac. So, and I don't do a whole lot of selfie-ing. I should ask a couple of friends though. I have friends who don't post pictures of anything but themselves. So maybe we should get one of them on the phone and see what they think.
It looks like I was right. It's 1.2 megapixels. So I don't even know what the rumor is in terms of what they would upgrade it to, 1.5, 2 megapixels. You know, it's still going to be a much lower resolution camera than the rear facing one. So
right. Well, yes. I mean, like I say though, it feels like that's almost a gimme. I mean, if there are lots of other better front-facing cameras out
there. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, if the components are there and they can put one in and not sort of compromise other things, size and thickness and all those things being that, then I think you're right. It'll probably be in there. Now, I will give you a plus one bonus because you had asked for that.
You see, I was going to say, like a good game master, are you okay if I throw your adventure, sideways?
Yeah.
I was hoping you were going to roll a one. Should we tell people what a one is, or should we just talk about how awesome it would be?
That would be when you fumble and impale yourself on your own sword or something like that, right?
Wow, is that what you think it is? Yeah, no, I know, you're right. It's a critical failure. If you had actually rolled that, apparently I would have joined Sirius Black, which is not a D&D reference, but I think people will get it anyway.
Right.
I like the glowing Apple logo idea. That was number one on your list. It's number one in my heart. I like that even more than I like the bigger screen. And I know the bigger screen is much more useful, but I guess it was U-Switch hit this week with the story. And normally I don't care. I was honestly afraid when you wrote to me and asked me if I wanted to do this because I pretty studiously avoid the hardware rumors.
Sure.
Except for the ones that you can't avoid. Like, I don't know if you heard, but Apple's thinking about making some sort of wearable.
Yeah.
And of course, the 4.7-inch iPhone and the 5.5-inch iPhone, neither of which are sure things yet. But then there's one source who, when they come out with pictures, I'm like, okay, he's usually reliable. Sonny Dixon of sonnydixon.com, which I misspelled on today's iChart magazine. So D-I-C-K-S-O-N, sonnydixon.com, has a picture of what looks like the back panel of an iPhone with a hole for an Apple logo.
Right.
So it can light up or
inlay.
Yeah. Yeah. It could either be a light up inlay or it could be an NFC window or it could be both. Hate the idea of it being NFC only because, everybody's been burned on that rumor a million times, but I think it would make the iPhone incredibly sleek if it had the sort of indicator light on there, and then also really annoying at movie theaters.
Yeah,
just insanely annoying. But
I think one of the related rumors to that was that it might be used for kind of light up notifications.
Yes,
which is an interesting concept to think about. So if it's
that's a totally
flat,
awesome idea.
Yeah, well, unless you have it in a case, I guess, and then. Well,
even my OtterBox, though, has a place for the Apple logo because apparently they think that I want everybody to know that what I'm carrying is an iPhone.
Sure.
And honestly, if I'm going to put it in OtterBox, I don't really care. But they left a hole for the Apple logo. So I can see the Apple logo right now not light up and do anything. So I'm assuming there would be some case makers who would leave that open. I mean, I assume that it would be something that you could turn off. I mean, just like vibrate or ring or anything else. But it would be neat to, could you assign a certain pulse to somebody particular calling in, or would there be one color for a text message and another color for a voicemail or something like that?
Multicolor LED behind that would be useful.
Could I set it to rave mode? That would be awesome.
As long as I could do classic Apple and have it be a rainbow, that'd be awesome.
Did you notice in the stickers ad that they used for the rainbow logo?
Yes.
I didn't mention it on macOS 10, but
loved it.
That's crazy.
It was almost like fritzing. It was like this fritzing little flickering of the classic logo.
Yeah, I probably should have mentioned that on Mac OS X. Actually, I didn't even do the ad on Mac OS X. Didn't talk about it, but yeah, there was the rainbow logo for all the world to see, as long as all the world didn't blink.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was very cool. Well, hey, there you go, iPhone 6 Roulette. Thanks for playing, Ken. If people want to check out your show and get more information about you and what you do, where's the best place for them to head?
Oh, macosken.com or twitter.com/macosken. And also, if you want to go back and read the daily news, check out iChart Magazine, EYE, iChart Magazine, where Apple News and Tech News make out, available on iOS Newsstand. And thank you very much for the multi-plugs.
Cool. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Paul Wheatley, The Gamer Show, The Pocket Show over on British Tech Network. Hey, Paul, how you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for agreeing to play iPhone 6 Roulette.
No worries. I'm a bit concerned, but we'll see what happens.
It'll be harmless. There's no dragons here, even though we are using a D20. So you just have to face off against the list of 20 iPhone related rumors. We're going to roll the D20 and see what it says we should talk about. And we'll talk about one of these rumors, and I'll just get your opinion and see where it takes us. All right. So I'm going to roll now.
Okay. You got building.
Five. Good one.
Five. Oh,
128 gigabyte storage capacity. There's a rumor that at least one of the models might have increased storage capacity. And this is, I'll let you weigh in on that. So what do you think? 128 gigabytes of storage in the next iPhone?
I think it makes sense. I think it has to be, because I mean they've been, what was it, two editions ago that they brought the 64 in? Was it five? That was the five that they brought the 64 in. I think it makes complete sense. I can't wait for it to get that kind of storage space. I have a 64 and it's completely full. They brought in the 128 gig iPad just about 6 months ago or something.
Oh, you're gonna. Yes, I think you're the iPad, right?
The iPad. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Sorry, I may break it.
No, you're fine. I just don't remember the release date. I thought you might have said iPod, and I was trying to remember if they did an iPod. I don't think they've done a 128 iPod Touch yet either.
Equally, I think that the iPod Touch is due 128. Now, this is maybe a bit crazy, and it's based on absolutely no rumors at all. But I think that makes complete sense if they're going to get rid of the Classic, and they give a 128 gigabyte iPod Touch, and then it just can the Classic completely. And if you want that kind of storage space, you take the iPod Touch.
Yeah, they went the other way with the iPod Touch, which is funny.
I know. Yeah,
the 16 lower cost one, right?
Yeah, I think that's more for like the kiddie market as well. you know, they just get a tiny little one that they could just kind of throw their apps on and things like that. But I'm fully on board. I'm putting all my money on the table for the 128. Definitely.
Do you think it'll be, there's been some rumors that it may be limited only to the 5.5 inch screen or the higher end model, or do you think it'll be, you know, they do a 4.7 and a 5.5? I guess we're kind of creeping into another rumor, but.
Yeah, we are, but and I don't really buy that rumor too much. It doesn't make too much sense to me to do these two handsets. I don't want to use the phrase, it's not very Apple-y, because a lot of things that Apple are doing just now are not very Apple-y, but the whole idea of having the kind of two handsets, two different screen sizes, I think it might, it's bizarre. I think it might happen, but I don't want it to happen, because I kind of like the idea of you have an iPhone and that's the iPhone you have, and there's not this kind of fragmentation, and then you get into the whole resolution. I don't mean to kind of drift into another one of the rumors.
No, that's
but you get
fine.
Into the whole the resolution thing where you have to kind of look into, you know, three times, it's essentially three times retina or something like that.
Yeah, that's what they're speculating. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that gets all sorts of crazy and stuff. But it's a funny one. There's loads and loads of rumors. I categorically don't agree with the idea that they're going to bring one out in the autumn and then another one out in kind of January, February. That's crazy. I don't think that's going to happen. If they bring both models out, I think they'll bring them both out in the autumn. However, I don't think they will bring two models out. I don't know.
Yeah. You're like, it's me. You're kind of hoping there's maybe just one size and Apple sticks with that party line. I want to get back to the storage thing, because I'm just curious. So 128 gigabytes of storage. I think a lot of people are clamoring for that because of the whole convergence thing. You know, I think if you have an iPhone, you don't really carry around an iPod or any kind of other music storage. But I mean, Apple's sort of addressed that too, and I don't remember if they've all the countries they've rolled this out to, but you know, you have like Music Match to kind of deal with that stuff and other things. And me personally, my iPhone, I have a 64, but I think it's rarely fuller than 32 gigabytes for me. Now my iPad's a different story. My iPad seems to fill up a lot more than my iPhone, and I'm just curious, you know, your experience. Do you think the largest storage is more important on an iPad versus an iPhone, or you think it's just kind of high time?
So I think definitely the high storage is more important on an iPad, but I think it's high time that they offered this kind of size for an iPhone as well.
Yeah.
More recently, I've been carrying my iPad less and less because I'm just not finding a use case. I have to carry my laptop just because of my job. Right. And I'm finding a use case for my iPad less and less. And so I'm more falling back to the iPhone and needing that storage space on my iPhone more and more. So even though I use Spotify, we do have iTunes Match over here, but I was kind of burned a few times with it at the very beginning, and I just kind of didn't go back to it again. Right. We don't have iTunes Radio either, but I use Spotify, but I download all my playlists because the network signal never lets us be spotty where I live.
Yeah, sure.
And when you put a bunch of TV shows on your iPhone and you've downloaded like half a dozen playlists,
right?
I'm breaching the 64 gig, you know, almost regularly, to the point that I'm, you know, wanting to take photographs of my kids and things like that, and it's telling me, oh no, you can't do that. You're gonna have to delete a few apps or something.
Not a situation you want to be in. Apps are getting bigger too. I mean, as games, I mean, you do the gamer show, right? So some of these games are getting larger and larger. And especially with larger screen sizes, you know, that's going to mean larger size graphics files and higher resolution images and things like that.
Well, especially going back to what we were saying before about it potentially being three times Retina, you know, you're going to have to deal with three times Retina images. Now, I mean, I have to say that I generally kind of fall back to the more kind of simplistic games on the iPhone and things like that, and even on the iPad as well. I've never quite managed to get myself into I forget the name of them now, actually, because I've never really played them, but the whole kind of Legacy Blade that's built in the Unreal Engine. I think it's a Legacy Blade or something like that.
Infinity Blade.
Yeah, I've not really been too much of a fan of those games, because if I'm playing that type of game, I far prefer to sit in front of a console or something to play it.
But I mean, even bigger screens, maybe, you know, more people might start to want to do that if you've got, especially like a 5.5-inch screen.
Sure.
That's a pretty good form factor for like handheld gaming, I think.
It is. It is. I mean, we're drifting again in a different topic here.
No, it's fine.
I'm not too much of a fan of the whole kind of... I was really disappointed that the whole gaming controller thing just doesn't seem to have fully got off the bit a little bit on all mobile devices, because I like the tactile feel of actual buttons. And the form factor of the phone is great. You know, I've got a Vita and a DS, and I really enjoy playing games on both of those, but it's because of the tactile buttons and being able to do that, which I was really hoping I was going to get the haptic feedback one, because I think that solves that problem. Because if you get the haptic feedback on the screen, you kind of get that tactile feel of, you could feel the ridges in the buttons, or supposedly, I've never used a tactile screen before, but it's a haptic screen before, I should say. Adding that haptic in might actually kind of bring all that together, and being able to feel the raised edges of buttons and things like that, so you can actually get that handheld controller feel, which in turn gives you the nice, you know, the fuller experience of a handheld console, which then gives the bigger games, the meatier games, and then it all kind of ties in together. I think the 128 has to come to all devices, all screen sizes, if they're going to do all screen sizes, because then otherwise they're stuck in a kind of a position whereby they're effectively calling the 4.7-inch one will effectively be the 6C, because it's sort of the lower down model. And I think if they bring out these two phones, I'm not convinced, if they do go down that road, I'm not convinced they're going to want to kind of say, well, we've got the big one and it's got all the bells and whistles that you want. Or you could have the kind of regular sized one and it's kind of missing some stuff.
I really hope they avoid. Just one last thing on the 128 storage pricing wise, you think they'll stick with the same sort of gaps between the screen sizes in terms of upping the price. So here in the States, it's about $100, $100.
Yeah. For each I think it's £100 here as well, despite the fact that $100 is about 60 quid here. But right.
That's it. Everything. So you think they'll stick with the same thing? So you'll have.
So.
Do you think they drop the 16 and it's 32, 64, 128, or do you think they expand to 4?
No, I would say they expand to 4. I think the 16 still, unless they do something, because you know, like the cost of flash storage and all that kind of stuff's coming down, so they could do something whereby they keep the price point at the bottom and make 32, because surely it isn't $100 or £100 to you know.
Right.
An extra 32 gigabyte of storage in there. So they could do something like that where they make the bottom model a 32. But when you take what you were mentioning before about the iPod Touch, they haven't really taken that angle.
Right.
Because they actually went smaller, and I think it was only about a £50 drop in price. It wasn't even that, actually, was it?
It was not a lot.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot at all. If they stay with the 32... at the current price point, I think they would be silly to get rid of the 16 just because they're adding another one on the top.
Right, just keep the price-conscious consumers, you know, have an entry level.
Yeah, I think so. There's an awful lot of consumers out there who just want the iPhone brand still.
Right.
They're not, you know, they're maybe not a heavy app users. They maybe use Facebook, possibly a bit of Twitter or something like that. There's lots of people I work beside fall in that category. And they maybe have whatever is the big game at the time, be it Flappy Birds or Candy Crush or whatever it happens to be. Yeah. And they maybe have a couple of playlists that they've downloaded from their computer or something like that. But they're not heavy users, and the 32 might just be huge overkill for them.
Yeah. I've seen a ton of 5Cs recently. So there's been no word on if there's going to be a 6C or anything like that. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with pricing. But Paul, that's it, I think. Thanks for agreeing to come on and play iPhone 6 Roulette. Just so that's people fun. Can find you and know about your shows and what you do. You want to say where people can follow along and find out about everything you're up to?
Yeah. So you could get me on the British Tech Network. I host both the Gamer Show, covering everything from iPhone, Android games, right through to Xbox, PlayStation, everything like that. It's a lot of fun, that show. The other show is the Pocket Show. It's basically three panelists, iOS, Android, and Windows. And we just chat about the news that's coming out from all three of those platforms on a fortnightly basis. And it's a lot of fun. We sometimes get a little bit of friendly and gentlemanly poking at each other. A little bit of fun making, but it's all in good fun. It's over at the BritishTechNetwork.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Paul Wheatley, WHEATLEY.
Great. Thanks, Paul.
No worries.
Jeff Gamet, Mac Observer, TMO Daily Observations, and Apple Context Machine, I guess also as well as one of my co-members on the We Have Communicators podcast. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing good. And Michael changed the name of the show on us, but
that's
get
right.
It
right. I'm stuck in the past. It's now the iOS show. The iOS show. So you can check us out there. But we're playing iPhone 6 Roulette. And thanks for coming on to play. I've got my 20 questions here. I've got the D20. You ready? We're going to just roll this thing and see where it takes us.
I am so ready.
Okay. Here we go. 2. The new design, ultra-thin iPod Touch style design.
I've been calling it the iPad Mini style design.
Oh, but, yeah, that too.
But whatever, yeah.
What do you think about not only the rumor, but we've seen mock-ups, we've seen, you know, reported parts and components. What do you think about how it's coming together for the iPhone 6?
Yeah, I think we'll see a different body style compared to the 5 and 5S. And I think it will have more of that iPod Touch or iPad.
Kind of feel to
so,
it.
So many I things. Yeah. iPad Mini, yeah.
You stumble. Yeah, I'm constantly doing that, stumbling over them. Do you think it's anything? Do you think it's... It doesn't seem all that radical to me, that different. You know,
I think what'll make it different... Or, well, and if we really want to use the word radical, what will make it radical is the fact that it's going to be thinner than what we currently have. Not by much, I'm thinking, because there comes a point where you're too thin to hold the housing for the camera.
Right.
And we see that on the iPod Touch right now. And I don't think Apple's going to go for the camera sticks out farther than the rest of the case sort of thing.
The camera bump.
For the iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the camera bump.
I'm not a fan of the camera bump either. I mean, I'm okay with it on the iPod Touch, but that's because I'm not using one right now.
It's funny you say that because I don't think that would bother me if I had an iPod Touch, I think. The little ring kind of sticking.
Yeah, the lens would be covered with smudges all the time because I would just absentmindedly rub where the bump is all the time. So my lens would just be gooped up all the time.
Right. The big thing I wonder about, and this gets into another one of the kind of rumors that's on this list, but I want to bring it up because it relates to the style and the design, the end cap thing. The back and forth on, so the mock-ups that we've seen have this antenna break that not only goes across sort of along the top like we have now, but then sort of wraps around the rounded, you know, sort of top and bottom edges.
Yeah.
Kind of creating this whole encircling thing. And the early mock-ups all had like this metal, rather than having a glass inset like we have now in that space on either end, it's like a metal inset. And then there was this, and I always thought it looked really ugly. So I don't know about you.
I'm not hip on it. I'm not hip on it, daddy-o. but I haven't seen it yet. And to be fair, when right. Apple redesigned the iPhone body for the 4, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I don't think I'm going to like that. And then I got a hold of one and bought it. And then they redesigned it for the 5, and I'm like, oh, I don't think I'm going to like it, and ended up thinking it's just fine. So my guess is whatever redesign Apple does for the 6, it'll be the same thing, where I'm like, oh, I don't know, and then I'll be fine with it. Although, the whole thing with the plastic bands running through at the top and the bottom just looks weird to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't look finished. It doesn't look like seamless like you would think an Apple product was, but
yeah, that's it doesn't look finished.
Yeah, your point is well taken though, because I really thought the two-tone iPhone 5S design was going to look really awful until I really saw it, you know. So like the comps and the mock-ups I thought just looked terrible, and then in real life it was kind of a different experience. Same thing on like the gold color. But I guess what I'm responding to with this one is a lot of the mock-ups had that, and then suddenly we heard, oh no, they're actually going to put, you know, that's just as they're sort of in testing, and they're actually going to be swapped out with the kind of glass ends. And then we saw some mock-ups like that look more like the current designs, and I thought they looked way better. Still had the band running around the top edge, but it just wasn't as glaring.
Right.
You know, it didn't look like somebody sort of took a big, heavy Sharpie and outlined the edge of the hand of the phone, or I guess a white paint pen would be more appropriate.
How about white out?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think the later mock-ups where it isn't essentially metal across the entire back do look better. And I'm hoping that the final version is more like those than like the earlier mock-ups.
Right. What do you think about the some of the rumored sort of button placement and style changes as well? I guess that kind of relates to the case and the overall design style too.
Like moving the power button to the side instead of having it on the top.
Right. And then also it's looking like the volume rockers are going to get more of that pill-shaped design, like on the again going back to the iPad or iPad. Yeah,
right. Yeah, moving the power button to the side actually makes sense to me, because if you're trying to use the phone one-handed,
right,
and you're having to move your finger up to the top all the time to hit the button, like if you just want to send a call right to voicemail,
right,
I can do that on a 5 or 5S. But considering the 6 is probably going to be 4.7 inches, I think it'll be big enough that doing that slide up to the top is going to be a problem for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me to see the power button move to the side. Seeing the volume rockers go back to kind of an elongated shape from the round,
mm-hmm.
Sure, I could see that happening too.
Because I think it's a thinness thing. I kind of think it maybe that's a thinness thing, you know, because that shape sure. kind of makes it easier to make it thinner and not have the right. sort of button sort of going right to the edge and being a little bit weird. I mean, even if you look at the 3.5-inch jack right now, I mean, that's kind of the biggest hole or sort of round thing on your device, and they're pretty much reaching the limit to where you're not going to be able to get any thinner than that and not have that being weird or, you know, going into the chamfered edge or whatever it might be.
Right. And and the kind of pill shape button, we know it looks okay yeah. because it's on the top of the iPhone 5S today.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit easier to kind of feel and press too. I don't know.
Yeah, and then it puts the iPhone 6 back, so it's more in line with the style aesthetics of the iPad Air and the iPad Mini.
Yeah, it's going to kind of match everything up. And great point on the power button. I did not get that. Like the last episode, I was talking about the rumor of Maccast. I talked about that rumor, and then I'm like, I don't understand why they're moving that. And then everybody emailed me like, dummy, you know, it's going to be bigger, so it's going to be easier to get that on the side. And I'm like, oh, of course.
Right? Yeah. That yeah, makes it makes sense. If you have giant hands, well, then it's still a tiny little toy wrapped in your fingers. But yeah. for the rest of us, I think moving it to the side totally makes sense.
I wonder about accidental presses. That's the only thing. Like, is it easier to hit something on the side? I feel like oftentimes I'm hitting the volume rockers even when I don't mean to. When I'm holding, sort of using my device as opposed to...
What hand do you hold your iPhone in?
Most often, I think my left, because I'm right-handed.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, it depends on what I'm doing. If I'm talking on the phone, left. If I'm, left. Yeah, because I'm pressing with my, you know, I'm either holding it in my hand and pressing the screen with my right hand, or I'm holding it up to my ear with my left hand. But I'll switch occasionally.
So in that case, your thumb is right on the buttons pretty much all the time.
Right.
And are you good accidentally point. Pushing the volume up and down?
Yeah, or it's even grabbing it or moving it in and out of your pocket. Or I'm just trying to think of all those scenarios. And I'm usually holding the phone from the side on the sides. You know, very rarely am I grabbing it at the top and sort of, you know, like that seems like a more deliberate gesture. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and I tend to hold my iPhone in my right hand because I'm left-handed. And then that way I can write. I'm so old school, I actually use pencil and paper to write. Mm-hmm. But periodically, I'll throw it over into my left hand, and my thumb lays against the buttons. And I typically don't accidentally push the volume rockers, although going in and out of my pocket, it doesn't matter how I grab my iPhone. There's a likelihood at some point that I'm going to hit the volume up or the volume down.
Yeah, that's more what I'm talking about.
Or the home button.
Huh. Yeah. Well, interesting nonetheless. Definitely going to be thinner, and I think you're right on. I think, you know, taking a lot of notes from the iPad design is probably even more so than the iPod Touch, just in terms of color scheme and stuff like that. Well, thanks, Jeff, for playing iPhone 6 Roulette.
Oh, sure. And I love that this is all managed through a D20. That's awesome.
Yes. Just so everybody, we kind of mentioned at the top, but if people want to find out what you're up to and catch up with you, where can they go? What should they do?
Head over to macobserver.com, and you'll find me and a bunch of other awesome people there. And Adam, you even do some help over there too, which is totally awesome.
Yeah. And I was on a daily observations recently. So thanks for inviting me there.
And you totally rocked. So yeah, Daily Observations, Apple Context Machine, iOS Show, and if you want to see stuff that's not tech related, Fresh Brewed Tales.
Freshbrewedtales.com. Great. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for having me on.
Dan Benjamin, 5x5. Hey Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I can't wait. I can't wait for this.
I can't believe we haven't had you on. And I was going to list out all your shows, but then I realized that would be the whole segment.
Right. No, I do too many. Friend said I'm overexposed.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think it's incredible what you built. But I can't believe we haven't had you on the Maccast. So thank you for coming on and
thanks
agreeing
for
to play
me.
iPhone 6 Roulette. So I've got my D20 here. I'm going to roll it, and we're going to pick from this list and see which rumor we're going to be talking about. Ah, We were worried about which one you might get. 13, which is the higher resolution screen, the 1704 by 960 pixel resolution screen.
Yeah, this is the one. I've been reading rumors about this since maybe April or May, I can think about. And this is, you know, they all talk about this tentatively and they say, well, you know, so the current resolution of the iPhone 5S is 1136 by 640.
Right.
And so this one is rumored of being 1704 by 960, which would give us a display of, I think it's 416 PPI.
Right.
But keeping the same 16 by 9
the ratio.
Yeah.
Yeah. A 3X from the original 568 by 320, I think.
So yeah.
The iPhone, like the Retina doubled it, right? So that's why we had the 2X, and this is kind of a, you know, another half step, I guess, really, if you're looking at the overall sort of increase.
Yeah, and I mean, this overlaps a lot with the other discussion, which is, are we going to get larger displays?
Sure.
And, you know, trying to you know, keep to the specific answer, you talk about pixel density. This is 356 PPI, I think, right? Or is that the old one? Yeah, that's the current one. The current one.
Do quick math.
the current one. So this would that's what my notes mean. The 356 PPI would be if they bumped it up to the 5.5 inch model.
Okay.
So that's the other rumor, which right. we can't talk about.
Bigger screen.
But see, that makes more sense to me is that the reason that they would be going to a higher resolution would be for a larger size screen. I don't think we're going to see a higher resolution on because maybe I'm getting old or something, but even with my glasses on, and I'm starting to have to do that thing where you if something's a little too close, you kind of have to pull it away a little. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, when you get older. It's funny. Ken and Ray and I were kind of talking about this in our pre-show when I recorded with him. But yeah, I have to do this thing now where I wear glasses because I'm nearsighted. I've got to lift my glasses up, move the display away. But
right.
if it's close, I have to take my glasses away because it makes everything tiny. You know, so.
Yeah. They call that an add one or a plus one or some weird term for that. But but even so, you know, this thing is really, really clear. And I've used lots of Android phones and I own an Android phone and it has a higher resolution and a small. Honestly, I feel very, very happy with the Retina display on my MacBook Pro. And I feel very, very happy with the way that the iPhone 5S looks density-wise, pixel-wise, resolution-wise. I am not in that category of people who wants a bigger phone. I think it's a great size. And I've used an Android phone for a number of weeks exclusively with a larger screen size. And if you get to a larger screen size, then you become one of those people who now you have to hold the phone in one hand and sort of hunt and peck in the other. And I'm a thumbs guy.
Yeah.
And so for me, I don't want a larger screen, but as far as the resolution, I just don't think there's an advantage for them to focus on, you know, some of these other things in this roulette you talk about,
right.
Would they go with a, you know, more, you know, a better camera, optical image stabilization. Those things are like improving what the phone can do. Maybe I'm crazy. I feel like the resolution of the screen's perfect for the size. If they go with a bigger, higher resolution, it's for a bigger screen.
Right. And not necessarily pixel density. So two things I have to ask you. So on the Android phone that you mentioned that you've been using, how much larger of a screen are you using? Are you using under a 5 or bigger than 5? I mean, they're getting all the way up to 7 inches at some point.
Yeah, those are ridiculous. The Android phone that I spent the most time with is the HTC One M8. Mm-hmm. And I should know off the you can tell how much time I've spent with it. I spent about 2 weeks solid with this thing because I really wanted to. My plan was to spend, you know, a whole month with it, but it didn't make it. But that is a 5-inch screen.
5-inch. Okay. So just a little bit bigger than the 4.7, if that's what we end up with in the iPhone 6.
Yeah. The dimensions of the phone are 5.76 by 2.78 by 0.37 inches, but it's a 5-inch screen. And that, you know, lots of people, when I told them I was going to be trying this experiment for 2 weeks on Android, they said, oh, you're going to love the bigger screen. You're not going to be able to go back to the iPhone. I couldn't wait to go back to the smaller size screen.
I'm kind of the same way. I like the size and form factor. I'm really worried that they're going to do a 5.5 and then it's going to have, you know, all the better specs, because that's kind of one of the rumors that's out there too. And it's like, yeah. The 4.7 is going to be good for me. I think 5.5 is really going to feel too big, but then if it's got, you know, a better processor and a better camera and you can only get it in the 5.5, I'm going to feel like a chump when I get the 4.7 and I don't have like all the good stuff, right?
Oh, and that's the real question, isn't it? Would they go the route of putting all the latest, greatest, best stuff in the bigger one because it looks like everyone would want it?
Doesn't
or would
like
they,
Apple, yeah,
yeah at, or would they make basically the same phone and you can just pick the size.
Right.
I don't know. You look at the 5C, nobody was expecting the 5C to be exactly what it was either. And it definitely doesn't have the latest, greatest stuff in it.
Sure.
The 5S is much better.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the 5C. I would rather have a 5C, but I'm spoiled by the touch sensor. I'm spoiled by the good camera.
Right.
I don't know. I hope they don't do that.
Yeah. I hope they don't either. So then the other thing I was curious about, so you talked a little bit there about pixel density. And so I think you're in a similar camp to me too, in terms of the pixel density. You know, Apple's maintained sort of, I guess Apple hasn't officially said, but it's always been kind of given that Retina is about somewhere above 300 PPI, you know, 326, yeah. Something
right.
above that in terms of Apple's marketing world. But Android and some of the other devices have gone with these, you know, super HD, and, you know, they're like packing more and more pixels in there. So you got 400, and I think you're even approaching with some phones, again, 500 PPI sort of densities. But I've always felt, you know, the 300, 326 and above works for me. And it sounds like you're in a similar camp.
I completely agree with you. I don't, and you know, I know people who will really sweat the details when they're talking about these kinds of screens,
right.
And they'll look at them and they'll say, well, this is a little bit better. This one's, and these are the same people who spend, you know, 3 years researching which TV they're going to get because, you know, this one has blacker blacks or this one has truer blacks. And, you know, I get that. Like if you have that kind of time, I get that. But for me, I think that the screen looks fantastic. And I think that if they want to make a higher density, a better resolution, do it. But I would much rather Apple, and it, you know, this is, I don't work there yet. You know, maybe they'll listen to the show and you know, put me in charge for a day so I can tell them what to do with their iPhones. But I would much rather have a better camera. I would rather have optical stabilization.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I would rather have NFC. All the things on your list. All these things on your roulette list.
Yeah.
I want better battery life. I want wireless charging. I want 120. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I want all these things. The lowest thing on my list is improve the current resolution for the current size phone. Who cares?
Give me my old eyes can't tell, like you said. You know, like most of us can't see that, you know. If you're getting out the magnifying glass, you're missing the point, right? Because the point was, from a normal viewing distance and normal operation, you can't see the pixels. I think we surpassed that at 300 for most people. But
I totally agree. And but the things that are, I mean, the iPhone has a great camera that I think could be even better. You know, I think the battery life could be even better. I think NFC would be really cool. But I feel like we're at a point now where if they bump the resolution a little, like, okay, but don't do that at the expense of one of these other great things that are listed there. That's got to be low. It's got to be low on Apple's list too.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The last thing on this is the one thing I do believe on here is they're going to want to stick with that ratio. So that 3x resolution sort of thing, that makes, you know, developers' jobs. And I know I was going to mention, you know, I've been following you since you taught me how to get a PHP Apache environment up on my system with Hive Logic. So,
oh, man.
Yeah. So thank
you
for that.
Sorry you had to go through that.
No, it was great. I couldn't have done it without you, you know, your how-tos and on your site and stuff like that. But
that's awesome. Well, I've been listening to you for the last, I think I was reading somewhere that your show has been going on for almost 72 years now. So I haven't been listening the whole time, but most of it.
Yeah, but for developers, you know, like not having that option to have your app and it scales up nicely, you know, right from day one when the phone releases, and then you can work out, you know, upping your graphics and your assets and things like that, and then push an update. But, you know, not having everything sort of break or look funky or weird, you know, the day the phone comes out, I think is a big deal for keeping developers happy.
It really is. You want to be able to launch. You want to be able to go and get the new device and have it sync up and download all the apps that you like and have them look great, right?
Yeah.
Right there, and not have to, you know, not have to stress out about, oh man, as a developer, oh man, now I've got to come out with something new for that has to look great on, you know, yet another set of, you know, set of devices. So yeah, I think Apple's well aware of that. I think, you know, I remember when the iPad first came out and there was that two times, you know, thing where you could essentially zoom the apps. It wasn't great. It was usable though. I mean, it was all right. And people really blasted that. And I thought, yeah, it's okay. At least I can use the app.
Gets you by, yeah.
It gets you by. Apple doesn't want to go through that again though.
No. Well, and they say, you know, 3X is, like I said, it's only a sort of a half step. So it should actually look better if that's the route they end up going. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you for taking a time out of your busy schedule and coming on to do iPhone 6 Roulette.
Adam, I'm here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for you.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate that. If what about for everybody else? So if everybody else wants to check up with you and get at you 24/7,
Special access is just for you, but they can go to 5x5.tv. That's where we do all of our shows. I do a bunch of them over there, and I'm on Twitter at Dan Benjamin on Twitter. And you know, for them, it's 12 to 18 hours a day. For you, you get all 24.
Oh, well, thank you. David Sparks, Mac Power Users and the Mac Sparky Field Guys. Hey, David, how you doing?
Excellent, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing great. You ready to do a little iPhone 6 roulette?
Yes.
Okay, we've got the list of 20 rumors. Got the D20 here in my hand.
I'm impressed that you have a D20, Adam. I want to say that. I lost mine. I need to get one now.
I have a whole leather pouch, dice bag pouch from my old D&D days. I actually need to get back into that, but that's a whole nother topic and story. But let me roll this.
Please include me when you do, because okay. I need a D&D buddy, and we live close enough. Drive.
All right, but here we go. All right, I've rolled, and we came up with six. Oh, six is NFC. NFC capabilities in the iPhone 6. This is one of those ones I think a lot of the rumor sites don't give a lot of legs to. But what do you think? NFC?
Well, it has an etymology to the rumor. It was something that everybody said, oh, they're going to definitely have that in the next iPhone.
Right.
And then Apple didn't add it. And then for a little while, we went through this phase where Apple was going to fail and the company was going to burn in flames because they didn't add NFC and everybody else was. And that was the thing to come.
Right.
And then nobody used it. And now nobody cares. So my official prediction is you will not see NFC in any future Apple product, probably ever.
Yeah. Why do you think the failure of NFC? Because, I mean, there was this like period of time when everybody's like, this is the thing, right? This is, we're going to bump our phones and which was always a bad term anyway, but yeah. we're going to bump our phones and transfer all our stuff. Like, why do you need the bump, first of all, if you have NFC? But okay, I digress. But yeah, so, I mean, maybe that's the reason why it didn't take off.
At the time, I actually spoke to a phone engineer listener of our show who said that it was an engineering issue, that you needed a special antenna that the iPhone really just didn't have room for. But, I mean, this was probably the iPhone 4 days or
three GS.
I don't know when it was. But at the time, they were saying that it just wasn't practical. And I always felt like it was kind of one of those things where Apple doesn't own the underlying technology, and they're always pretty resistant to tying their hardware to somebody else's technology. Mm-hmm. And I always felt that played a role in it. But at this point, I mean, it's clear that Apple is, they've got the thumbprint reader on your phone now. They've got the iTunes credit card numbers they keep bragging about. I think they very much want to get into my phone as my wallet kind of situation, but they don't want to do it with NFC. They're going to find some other way.
Well, yeah, so you're talking about maybe their own payment system thing, and I want to get into that in a second, but the one angle that's sort of come up over and over as I bring this up on my show is, you know, we in the States, we don't use NFC a lot, but outside the U.S., there's a number of countries where they use this kind of technology for things like railway passes or subway passes kind of things, or also micropayments at, like, vending machines and things like that, and they use some different sort of standardized technology. And one of the things that I had heard is that some of the chips now that Apple might be using in the phone would just probably have NFC in there anyway, and it's sort of just like, if they would just turn it on, then people could use it potentially with these other systems. Right. Yeah. And Apple's not going to do a deal with every, you know, every railway company around the globe to kind of get the thing. So if Apple's truly trying to make the phone a replacement for the wallet, they kind of need to cover everybody's bases, right? To have it be that one device that I never leave the house without.
I could still see them, though, you know, even with the new enlightened Apple from this year's WWDC, right. Yeah. I could still see them having a piece of, they could have the hardware in the phone already and not turn it on.
Right. Oh yeah, I totally buy that. But it's sort of the one argument that's sort of just like, well, you know, if they just let it be there, then these other systems can use it. But even there, here's my problem with NFC even there, because a lot of people want to argue, well, Apple should use NFC for their own payment system, and why aren't they doing that? There's a whole kind of crosstalk issue, because I even mentioned that, you know, in these countries, you'll have a system where you'll have it built into your credit card, and you'll have it built into, say, your railway pass card. And if they use the same technology as you're going through the turnstile, it can, like, double charge. It can, like, do this weird sort of crosstalk kind of stuff, which sounds really inconvenient to me. Like,
yes.
I'm going to have to call up my credit card company to, you know, reverse, you know, a couple dollar charge or whatever it might be. That just doesn't sound like the solution. And I think that's partially why Apple's shied away from this sort of NFC solution. So if Apple does, you know, taking it to the next level, if Apple's not going to use NFC and there's these rumors about payment system, do you think Apple's going to come up with some sort of payment system? And if they do, what kind of technology are we talking about? Are we talking about iBeacon?
Well, they have Passbook,
right,
that never really took off that well. And I think it's been kind of a disappointment for us geeks as well as Apple. Mm-hmm. And I thought that Passbook was probably just going to be one of those things we don't hear about anymore until one day they've got, hey, we've got the new thing that's going to replace Passbook, and this is why everybody's going to love it, and it's swell. But then just a few weeks ago, they updated Passbook.
Right.
So I don't really know. I mean, I use Passbook to get on airplanes.
Yeah.
My wife uses it to buy coffee. And
that's it to buy coffee?
Yeah, that's about the extent of it.
So I've used it for conference passes and tickets. I use it for movie tickets. I use Passbook at least a couple times a month, one or two times a month, I would imagine at this point. And if it was supported by more things, I think I would use it a lot more.
Yeah, I think that's what they would prefer, is that it's something they control and they kind of dictate how people get into it. But, you know, as we've seen, it hasn't really jumped up and taken off the way I think everybody would like it to. So
I've always maintained that they already have their payment platform in place in terms of the iTunes account and all those credit cards Tim Cook likes to talk about all the time, and using the App Store Easy Pay system as a model. I think that could be rolled out into tons of different retail locations and function just as well in exactly the same way, where I just sort of scan the things with my phone and then it just charges through my iTunes account, and Apple takes a, you know, a handling fee and passes the rest on to the retailer, you know, retail partner. I would love that system, and it doesn't require any extra special technology. The one thing they could roll in is maybe some iBeacon detection, just so they know, hey, you're in this store or that store, and you know, couple that with some marketing couponing kind of stuff, and I think they have an amazing platform already without needing any kind of extra chips or technology or anything other than what's in the phone today.
From your lips to God's ears, Adam.
And that's more of a deal thing. I think that's what Apple really wants to see. I think they were really kind of test piloting with the Easy Pay in their stores. And do you use the Easy Pay in an Apple store? I love it.
I have a rule. Whenever I use it, as soon as I know I've successfully paid, I stick whatever I bought in my jacket and run for the door. It's like my way of testing.
And they've never stopped you.
So far, I haven't been like tackled, so it must work.
Yeah, yeah. Then you wonder, you know, does it only work for Apple? You know, would there be more theft? I maintain, too, there's not going to be more theft with that system, because I think you're either a shoplifter or you're not. I don't think the technology sort of converts you. But, like, even my Costco kind of had a system. There's one Costco by me who's piloting a system where you go in, you take their card, and they give you a little handheld reader. And you walk around the store, and as you put the stuff in your cart, you scan it. And so then when you get up the front, it just relays everything in your cart to the register, and then you just pay and you leave. Now, that still relies on a credit card. I would love the one less step if I just scanned everything, threw it in my bag or cart, and then just walked out.
Yeah, with your app.
Yeah. And if I, you know, I mean, I guess with iBeacon, if you got far enough away from the store and you hadn't hit pay, it could just auto-charge you.
Well, I mean, the right. One thing is there's nothing magical about a piece of plastic in your wallet.
Right.
And I think a lot of people give it a lot more importance than it needs to have. So why not have some digital method for this stuff?
Yeah. And I guess, you know, some of the other NFC things you'll hear is, well, you could do sort of NFC handoff kind of stuff with your Mac devices. But again, we've got low energy Bluetooth, and that seems like a technology that can be leveraged, you know, even in more ways than some of this more proprietary, even shorter range NFC kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. It's I think that in summary, though, I think I'd be really surprised if they have NFC in the next phone.
Yeah, I think I would, too. Well, David, thanks for coming on and playing iPhone Roulette. You want to tell everybody real quick? I know you've got some exciting stuff going on actually right now with the field guides. You want to talk about that a little bit?
I just released a brand new book. It's called Presentations, and it's all about how to give a great presentation. That it's an interesting take for me, because a lot of my books are very technical, you know, like, and this book does have a lot of information on how to use Keynote. There's 44 separate screencasts in the book. Mm-hmm. But it's also a lot of just good practical advice about how to plan and how to prep it. And what do you do on presentation day? And, you know, what do you wear? What do you say? How do you deal with all the little problems you have when you show up? So it's kind of a soup to nuts book on how to give a great presentation. I'm very excited. It's doing really well, and it's in the iBooks store. So you can go check it out right now on your iPad or your Mac.
Yeah, it's got an awesome new design, too. And, of course, you got the podcast going on, right, and Skype and all that.
You bet. Mac Power Users. But, yeah, the new book, the design, I'm really happy with. In fact, while I was doing it, I was thinking this has to be something that Adam would approve of, because I know that you've got a great eye for this stuff.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love it. So people should check that out. They should check you out on the Mac Power Users, and also, I guess, follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, Max Sparky.
Max Sparky.
Or MaxSparky.com. If you go to MaxSparky.com, you can find pretty much everything I'm doing.
Great. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Adam.
Airfon, Cult of Mac, and the Cult Cast, how you doing, man?
Hi, I'm so well. Thank you.
Thanks.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for agreeing to play iPhone 6 Roulette with us.
Of course,
This has been fun. We've done a couple of these so far, and it's been very, very interesting. So I've got my D20 here.
All right.
We've got the list of 20 iPhone 6 rumors.
So many rumors.
We're going to let fate decide what we want to talk about. So here
we go.
That's
probably the wisest way.
12. This is the first repeat. believe it or
out of
not
20 blah,
no we've
darn,
been you're
okay.
You're the sixth interview. So 12 is the improved FaceTime camera, so the improved front-facing camera. I think this is when we talked with Ken Ray about. Mm-hmm. So what are your opinions on an improved FaceTime camera, if you have
I think
any?
It's a no-brainer. I mean, actually, I don't. I'm just going to stand here silently for the next 10 seconds. It's a no-brainer, right? They always upgrade the cameras, the front and the back, on generally every major upgrade. So I think that the camera will definitely be improved. Will it be improved a lot? I don't think so. It'll probably be a minor improvement.
Yeah. I mean, do you think there is any reason to? I don't think they've updated it in a while. We've been at like 1.2 megapixels for a while now.
Did you just totally undo everything I just said?
No, not at all. No. They and even the rear-facing camera, you know, they try to update I mean, we've been at 8 for a little while, you know, and we can get into that rumor too. I mean, we can overlap a little.
But here.
We
there's don't more have to it than megapixels, the boring right? FaceTime camera. I mean, there's optical image stabilization. There are larger pixel sure. areas, so there's they can make those kind of improvements, so the picture quality would improve, yeah. even though, as you said, the megapixels may not increase.
Well, so here's the thing I'm thinking: the FaceTime camera, like selfies, right? We want better selfies. It's always kind of sucked,
always
right. The front-facing camera has been great for FaceTime calls,
mm-hmm.
But really for actually taking pictures, I mean, you use it in a pinch, but yeah. it could be improved, right? I think it'd be nice if they would improve it. I personally, I'm not sure they will, but I'm curious. I mean, how do you feel like it could use an upgrade or no?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you use it at all?
Absolutely.
I mean, that was the other thing I asked.
As a serious you know, selfie enthusiast,
are you?
I'm all for it.
Are you really?
Oh, several a day. Yeah, absolutely. And so, some of them I just keep for my own personal collection. I don't always post them online. But you know, you want to keep a good selection of photos of yourself over time, so you can see how you age and stuff, and how good you look every day. So yeah, I'm always a big fan of improving the camera. If they would make it better, that would be great, because I feel like it's like the redheaded step camera,
yeah,
you know, it's just kind of neglected. So yeah, absolutely. And I don't take as many selfies as I implied, maybe just a couple every week.
I'm not a big selfie person, but it's big with the kids, they tell me.
The kids love it. The kids really love it. Yeah, they love
apparently
selfies.
That's the new, have you heard that's the new, it's the new, like, they don't want celebrity signatures anymore.
Have you heard? I this saw thing? That
Uh-huh. Like, yeah, you don't collect signatures. You want to collect a selfie with your favorite celebrity, and that's like the thing.
Totally. That makes so much more sense too, right? Because
annoying
it's probably,
for celebrities though.
It's annoying for celebrities,
right.
I'm sure. But you want to be in that moment with the celebrity, right? I mean, if you see Justin Bieber on the street, what would you rather have? A signature or a picture of him standing next to you?
Yeah.
I think the answer is clear.
Yeah.
The signature.
Well, so Ken took his plus one bonus. You want to take a plus one bonus on your roll?
Sure. What does the plus one bonus mean? Does it mean
you get to pick one? You get to pick one of these 20 that,
oh,
that interests
my goodness.
You.
Let's see here. Let's go with one that is just not going to happen. Let's do the haptic feedback.
Dynamic haptic feedback.
Dynamic
this one
haptic
just
feedback.
Surfaced. This is like a relatively recent one. Have you talked about this on Cultcast yet?
No, we haven't mentioned this on Cultcast, which is why I thought it was interesting that you have it here, because I've never heard of them even reportedly, rumoredly adding anything like this. This is kind of like NFC.
Right.
It's one of those things that people might want because Android devices have it, but I don't think that we'll see it on the next iPhone. What about you?
Yeah. Not on the next iPhone. It comes up every once in a while because Apple has a patent. There's like a patent filing somewhere on this technology. And supposedly, you know, it's supposed to be really, Apple's version of it is supposed to be very targeted. So almost like the feedback makes it feel like you've got buttons in specific areas of the screen.
Huh.
So it almost adds a tactile element to the surface of the screen, even though it's not changing or modifying the surface. It's using like selective like vibration sense. I have no idea even how this stuff works or how.
I don't even know what selective vibration means. Does that mean like when
like
you touch
targeted.
It, just like the area where your fingertip is?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That would actually be very cool. Would you like haptic feedback on your next iPhone?
I guess I'd have to experience it. I've never, and I guess some of these systems exist. But it's, you know, a lot of times it's more just you touch and the kind of the whole thing buzzes.
Yeah, the whole thing shakes your hand and then you drop it.
it feels like you're getting shocked. Or
I would
have to really depend on how much it adds to the experience. I sometimes feel like it feels like one of those technologies that's going to be like 3D where it's like got all this promise and you think, oh, this is going to be awesome. And then you're just kind of let down. You're like.
Yeah, 3D, I think, was like the biggest letdown of the last 10 years. Don't you remember all the 3D stuff we saw at CES? And just none of it.
3D TV, you're going to watch all your sports in 3D. The football players are going to be tackling you in your living room.
Absolutely. Nobody cares about 3D anymore, even on phones. Like, when I saw the Amazon Fire Phone and I saw that feature that they had, I was like, that looks pretty cool. The 3D looks like it would be really novel when you first use it, but then after 10 minutes, you shut it off and you never use it again.
Yeah. I mean, you get the 3DS. Some people kind of really liked that, but even I looked at that and it was like, okay.
Yeah, a lot of my friends that had the 3DS turned off the 3D.
Well, it's that I always call it. It's like the non glasses 3D is that like 3D in a box 3D, right? It's like you're looking down into a box and everything sort of goes in, and it just again it feels like there's all this promise, but it really doesn't pan out in the end. And really, the haptic feedback technology feels like that to me. I mean, if it truly is developed the way it's described in this patent, it would be amazing, right? Because you could have interface controls that it feels like you're actually pressing a button. If they can really pull that off, yeah, absolutely. Why wouldn't you want that in there?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I would prefer it either way, just because I really like that, you know, that tactile response when you press a button. It's one of the reasons why I leave the little audible click on your iPhone when you press different things. Like when you're typing, for instance, you can hear things. Mm-hmm. But it would be very cool if they implemented a new way to do it and not just the same old haptic feedback that they have had for the last, you know, 5, 6, 10 years. Yeah. And, you know, if Apple's doing it, I really do believe this. If Apple's doing something like that, they're going to fine tune it and it's going to work very well, and it's going to be unlike anything that we've seen in a regular phone. Yeah.
It'd be great too if they could combine it. Another thing that the technology sort of floating out there that would be amazing is if they could make touch screens have sort of a different just tactile feel or resistance in some way. So I'm thinking like it'd be great for some of these new finer point styluses if it actually had a little bit of resistance and drag where it kind of felt more like pencil on paper sorts of things. So if they could provide some sort of tactile feedback like that, a haptic feedback that would, you know, simulate that, that would be great too for like drawing apps and things like that. It'd feel a lot more natural than, you know, a hard nib on glass, which just, you know, just flies all over the place.
Yeah, I'm not down with the hard nib on the glass. Yeah. You mean the actual you know, utensil that you're using to write would actually have some type of drag, like physical reaction to the iPhone? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
That would be insanely, insanely great. I mean, that just kind of seems like
or even
something
if
you'd be using on the Enterprise.
even if it was simulated, I think they're kind of developing that sort of stuff. You know, I've even seen patent applications for things like where the membrane, there's like an extra layer in the membrane between the top surface glass and the bottom and I don't know if it'd be glass or probably more like plastic that would have flexibility where it could actually raise up just slightly certain selective areas. So you actually get, it's not just, you know, pseudo tactile. It's actually creating a tactile button on the surface of the display, which is just crazy to me.
That sounds like some serious science fiction stuff right there.
Yeah, they're working
seriously
on it.
Sounds like they're... space movies, the stuff that they would use when they're landing on planet Vulcan, you know.
But 10 years ago, an iPad sounded sci-fi too, right?
Yeah, it did. A lot of things that we use now sounded impossible back then. So I'm definitely not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying that would be mind-blower.
Not in this iteration. No, I don't think. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think haptic feedback's chances are even slimmer than NFC's. And NFC is not looking too
good. Haptic feedback is at the very bottom of the list of things, I think. And NFC is not far above. Yeah. But let's keep our fingers crossed for the glowing Apple logo.
Yeah, that seems to be a popular one.
I would love that. Yeah. That seems like one of those really cool, fashionable elements that people would love to have on their iPhone.
Yeah. Until, as I think Ken Ray might have mentioned, or you're sitting in the movie theater and everybody's freaking logo's glowing.
Well, hey, if you're using your phone in the movie theater, you deserve to be shamed. So that just makes you an easier target.
Easier target. Good point. Good point.
For my half-chewed candy particles.
Well, cool, Erfan. Thank you so much for coming on and playing. Hey, if people want to check out what you're up to and follow along and all that stuff, how can they do that?
Please, I would welcome anyone. Come say hi to me on Twitter. That's just at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. And of course, you can always head on over to thecultcast.com. Check out our podcast. I'll be honest, it's not as good as Adam's. But, you know, it's like a close third.
It's a great show. No.
Thank you. Especially when you're on. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
There you go, iPhone 6 Roulette. I want to thank all of my guests for coming on and playing. That was a ton of fun. If you want to play along at home, I will post a link to the list of 20 questions on maccast.com, and you can try it out yourself. And if, hey, you're so inclined and want to record your response and send it off to us, maybe we can play it on a future episode of the MacCast. I'd be interested to get your opinion on any one of these rumors and comments and things like that. You know, we're going to find out here in a couple months exactly what we're getting, but it's still fun to kind of speculate. And it was a great time having these guys on to chat about that. So with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, also Text Expander Touch for your iPhone and iPad, as well as PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad, and check out their newest app, PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get all the information and details over at smilesoftware.com. Gazelle is the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth over at gazelle.com. And lynda.com. Lynda.com helps keep you up to date with your software, pick up brand new skills, or explore new hobbies with their easy-to-follow video tutorials. You can get a free trial by going to lynda.com/MacCast. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. I'd also like to thank CacheFly for providing the bandwidth for the MacCast. You can find them at cachefly.com. And advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. If you have any feedback for me, you want to make a comment, send in a question, you want to hear, you know, want to let me know about something you want to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can always send email to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-I-AM-9, or leave a voicemail on Skype. My Skype handle is the MacCast. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's over at maccast.com. And of course, that's where you'll find the 20 questions for iPhone 6 Roulette. While you're there, be sure to check out the MacCast forum at forum.maccast.com. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, that's twitter.com/maccast, or you can check out the Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. And also, we have a MacCast Google Plus community. Just search for MacCast on Google Plus and you'll find us there. But that's all the places to hang out and find us online between shows. That's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.